WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell a story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshall guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Oh, it is a wet Monday night talk. Thank you very much for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. We have a great show lined up for you. As I want to thank Liz Raven for the last-minute ad after finding out the sad news earlier this afternoon about the passing of Pete Frates. If you don't know Pete Frates' story, you probably, in some interesting way, partook, like most of us did a couple of years ago during the Ice Bucket Challenge, when you were challenged by a friend. And if anything, that not only did it help raise hundreds of millions of dollars, but it raised awareness. Later on tonight, we will speak with Casey Sherman. I believe that Casey actually has written something. Casey, other than being a best-selling author, he actually wrote a book. He co-wrote a book with Dave Wedge. And they wrote a book about the Ice Bucket Challenge and Pete Frates' story, Pete and his wife and his young daughter, and how they were trying to persevere through this deadly, debilitating disease known as ALS. Casey is going to chat with us about that. We were initially going to talk a little bit about kind of a little ongoing war that's going on between Casey and Alan Dershowitz, the famed Harvard professor, as he actually called Harvard to investigate Dershowitz's dealings with Jeffrey Epstein. And there's been a little bit of a volley back and forth where actually Dershowitz responded to Sherman. We were going to talk about that, but I feel it's best for us to table that conversation for another day and talk a little bit about Pete Frates. And it's interesting enough that Casey and Dave have a production company, and I think that there was in the works was a movie. I don't know if the screenplay was completed. Yeah, we've had many conversations with Casey and Dave, and I think they were working on the movie about Pete Frates' life. And we'll talk with Casey about that later on. But prior to that, coming up just after traffic in a few moments here, we will speak with State Representative Michelle Dubois. We'll get a chance to chat with her about her district, knowing that there was an education law. It was actually legislation to increase educational funding over the next couple of years, next 7 years, $1.5 billion education bill. Find out how her district is going to benefit from that. Right after that, we'll speak with Donnie Westhaver. Donnie is the head of the Whitman Area Toy Drive, which is one of the many nonprofit organizations that has collected toys for families in need, and the Whitman Area Toy Drive has actually been doing it for close to 20 years. He'll actually discuss their ongoing efforts to collect items and what their needs are this year. And then we will speak at 7 o'clock, beginning of the 7 o'clock hour, Wynn Falwell, Brockton City Councilor. We'll talk about the recent city election that elected a new mayor and a couple of new city councilors, some of the items that the city government will look to tackle in the next year.
'Twas 3 a.m. Christmas morning. Not a creature was moving, except for my brother Dave Jr., who had already been downstairs. When my brother woke me up out of bed, he said, "Come downstairs, Santa was there." Reluctantly, I followed to see what was there. As we reached the last step, we heard from up there, "Dad!
Jeffrey! David! Get back in bed now!"
Oh,
Oops, looks like we just made the naughty list. Merry Christmas and happy holiday from us at Brennan's Smoke Shop.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, here we are back with our first segment. As the folks know, that usually our very first segment is called the State House Report. As long as we have a representative or a constitutional officer to join us, we make it the State House Report. Joining us right now, we have State Representative Michelle Dubois, representing the 10th Plymouth District. Representative, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, Kevin. Thank you for including me.
How is everything going in your district?
Well, you know, I don't know if you do or you don't know, but formal sessions have broke for the winter recess, which is a calendar that I don't set. And so I am spending a lot of time in my district, and it's going great. I just had was speaking on a Saturday morning, even though it's on Monday night, and I just had my office hours at two different senior centers yesterday, and it went really well.
That is definitely fantastic. And, I mean, would it? I have to ask you, this time of year when you have just informal sessions and there's not a lot going on, are you still getting your constituents coming to you saying, listen, here's some of the things that I'm having issues with. Can you look into legislation, or is there any legislation in the works that will help me in this area?
So, typically what I'm doing right now, I imagine that could happen. And I am talking to constituents about policy issues, but in the realm of legislation right now, I'm focusing on planning for January because a few of my bills and bills that I think are important that were filed by other people are at different stages in the process that is laid out for us through the calendar that's presented in the rules of the state legislature. So I'm focused on that. I do a lot of constituent services. I have been planning a free pictures with Santa Christmas party that got canceled because of Tuesday snow. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about rescheduling that. I am working on different budget items. I'm stressing about the closeout budget that hasn't happened yet. So there's a lot of constituent services, and it could be policy oriented, but right now I'm talking to probably three different constituents about potential new legislation, but most of my time is being focused on constituent services and planning for the legislation that's already been filed.
Knowing that you were a long-term, you served in the city of Brockton as the Ward 6 city councilor, and then becoming a state representative representing a portion of Brockton, West Bridgewater, and East Bridgewater. One of the main issues that Brockton was dealing with, and a lot of communities were dealing with, is getting enough educational funding. We know that the city of Brockton was one of many gateway cities that was pushing for equity in education lawsuit. I know that there was a push to do something with the Ed Reform of 93 and update that. Give me your thoughts on the latest legislation that was put forth that I think it was signed into law, $1.5 billion over 7 years. How good of a package is this for the city of Brockton and for the communities you serve?
So, yes, I was a city council for 10 years, and during that time, we had substantial cuts from the state. And during that time, the city council and the mayor, when I was on the city council, except for the last 2 years, found money elsewhere in the budget to close shortfalls. We did have some layoffs, but in recent years, I want to say the last 4 years, there have been substantial, unbelievable layoffs of the Brockton Public School System because our discretionary funding on the city side to supplement the state lack of funding for our education system that we need has caused us to not be able to find the money elsewhere, the folks that were in the positions. And so it's been a really dire situation in Brockton. In West Bridgewater and East Bridgewater, they are feeling the pinch in different ways. And this Student Opportunity Act that the legislature passed and the governor signed into law, it's $1.52 up to $2.4 $4 billion based on like inflation, and so the areas that school systems are going to see increased funding in, there are a lot of areas, but the four prime areas are education for low-income students, education funding for English as a second language, ELL students, the funding that the state was giving to school systems around employee benefits. When this was the structure was set up back in the 90s, was they just didn't understand how expensive benefits were going to become, and it was totally inadequate. And funding for special education. Those are the four areas, prime areas, that the Student Opportunity Act touches on. And so what's so strange is, like, we've been passing these laws since I've been in office, and you pass a law, the governor signs the law, and then the administration and the bureaucrats that are below the governor interpret the law, and sometimes in ways that, I mean, the legislature had never thought. And the proponents had never thought. So when, for the last, couple months, I've been trying to get numbers for what the different school districts can expect in my district. And the East Bridgewater superintendent came up with a number. The West Bridgewater superintendent came up with a number. I met with them a few weeks ago. And the Brockton superintendent and the CFO, I've spoken with them so many times, and everyone is afraid to put a number on it because they don't want to be wrong, and they're not exactly sure how the administration is going to interpret it, and then the legislature has to fund it every year. So I've done my own calculations. Aldo, who's the Brockton CFO, has done calculations and has called everywhere in the state to see what their calculations are. Mm. And the governor released calculations during the process. So the governor's calculations had Brockton getting around $94 to $100 million more at the end of the 7 years.
Okay.
The calculation that I ran, and I don't know all the, I didn't put in for inflation or anything, was around $70 million. And Aldo's numbers were closer to my numbers. But, you know, we're going to see any of that funding is amazing. And under the governor's calculation, in 2020, it's like a $30 million increase for Brockton. I believe East Bridgewater was thinking maybe at the end of the, I can't quote the exact number, I want to say $7 million at the end of the 7 years. And I don't remember what West Bridgewater School Systems was, and I don't think it was fully fleshed out, because West Bridgewater and East Bridgewater will be benefiting mostly from SPED and the employee benefits piece. And Brockton will be benefiting from all four. And in the end, the whole Commonwealth benefits, because if we don't prepare kids to compete in the economy of today and tomorrow, the whole state is not going to be competitive. We're not going to be competitive across the nation, and we're not going to be competitive internationally. So it's really a great thing. We want our kids to be able to get jobs, to afford their families that they're hopefully going to be able to have, and not have to be on public assistance. And in the end, we can give money now for beautiful children to, learn and fulfill their full potential, or we can give money later for prisons and social welfare programs. So I really believe this is a wonderful thing. And it's going to make a big deal for the students.
Yeah, we're speaking with State Representative Michelle Dubois. I know you're somebody who watched the recent city elections closely. Give me your thoughts on going to have a new administration coming in. We got new people who are going to be on the city council. Being somebody, again, you were elected five times to serve as the Ward 6 City Council. How excited are you for this new administration and the new city government?
You know, it's a new day in Brockton, and I was with Robert Sullivan, Bob Sullivan, from the beginning. I served with him for 10 years on the city council. We went on together. We don't always agree, but I always know that his thought processes are from the perspective of putting Groton first and the residents that live here, and focusing on making a community a better place for the citizens that live here, which is really what I want. I really like Jimmy Pereira, who was his opponent. He also would be new. I'm just really excited that we have this, if we want to look generationally, for the last many mayors, we've had baby boomers as our mayors, and this is our first mayor that's a Gen Xer, if we want to put that in like labels, but if we want to look that way at it. He also represents a group that isn't just part of and a political establishment that is pretty prominent in the city. So it's exciting. I'm an outsider, so I got elected with not being married to anyone or related to anyone, no one's niece, no one's cousins, no one's goddaughter, no one's wife that was like politically connected. So it's good to see that now our mayor is also in that category. And he really got elected from a cross-section of citizens in the city. And I'm excited for him. I think he's going to do a good job. I'm going to be there to support him and work with him. And I'm looking forward to it.
So now, you said you're not related to anybody. You're not connected to anybody. But let's be honest here. Your secret weapon, my understanding is, were the spaghetti dinners that you would put together. That people turn out in droves for those. Am I wrong here?
You know, I haven't had one of those in a while. My mom's lasagna was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so like, I mean, of course, I've got five generations here in Brockton. So, I mean, as human beings, yes. I mean, people knew who my beautiful mom and dad are and my grandparents. But what I mean is, like, I didn't have to ask anybody to run.
Right. It was hard
work.
You
know, I'm not beholden to anyone, and I don't see Bob Sullivan as beholden to anyone.
Right.
He didn't have to ask any political, you know, godfather for permission to run for mayor. and it's really from a bottom-up perspective. I really like the idea that the people get to decide, and no matter how much money is thrown into a race to take you down, sometimes that money talks and it wins. That's what happened in other occasions. But in this occasion with Mayor Sullivan, Mayor-elect Sullivan, the money and the political connections, people that have money and political connections support Bob Sullivan. But we saw in the primary that it was different. So it's just exciting that we have someone that's, you know, from a new generation and a new way of thinking about things, that wants to be inclusive, that wants people of diverse backgrounds to have a say, that wants, and I know that Mayor Carpenter also wanted people from diverse backgrounds to be included. So I'm not saying that other mayors haven't. I'm just saying that it's good moving forward that we're going to have a mayor who really wants to hear from all the citizens of Brockton.
So we should end with a bang, and that is tell folks about your big event tomorrow, Tuesday, December 10th, that you're holding at Brack's Grill and Tap. This is the Holly Jolly fundraiser. Talk to us about some special guests who are going to be a part of this big event.
Well, everyone is invited.
Okay.
It is at Brack's. If you haven't been to that restaurant, it's really good. This is the first fundraiser I'm having outside of my district because I love this restaurant so much, and I figured people should try the new restaurant. It is wonderful, and I'm so lucky that it's being headlined by Mayor Moses Rodriguez, our current Brockton mayor, Mayor-elect Bob Sullivan, and Jimmy Pereira, who was Mayor-elect Bob Sullivan's opponent. I'm a conciliatory person. I want people to come together even if we disagree or if we were opponents before. And so I was really proud and happy that these three men have agreed to do that for me. Because I think they're all wonderful people, and I'm really honored that moving forward, Brockton is going to be in a place where all its city leadership really, really get along. And so it's going to be some yummy appetizers, some holiday cheer. Brax is going to be decorated to the nines for the Christmas season. And if anyone would like to come, they are more than welcome.
Yeah, it's
on Belmont Street up by... up by Stonehill.
Yeah, 1280 Belmont Street again. Tomorrow from 5 to 8 p.m. And this is for Michelle Dubois, the state representative, a strong voice for working families. And as she told you, how fantastic is this, you know, these folks who are coming. Mayor Moses Rodriguez is going to be there. Your mayor-elect, Bob Sullivan, is going to be there. And Jimmy Pereira. Jimmy Pereira is still working in the city with the Old Colony Planning Council, working with the new executive director, Mary Waldron. So it's going to be fantastic.
Yes, congratulations to Mary, right? She's going to do a great job.
Absolutely. Yes, so many changes between we got a new mayor, we got a new executive director of Old Colony Planning Council, and then you got Mike Thomas, who's now the new school superintendent.
I am so excited. Another first Gen X there. I mean, not that I need to focus on this too much, but yes, it's a whole new generation of people that grew up in Brockton on all these occasions, all the gentlemen you mentioned,
yep,
and want to continue giving back. And that's the frame of reference I come from. And it's good to see people, you know, hardscrabble people that worked hard to get where they are, and really put in the time and the investment, and the citizens of the city are seeing that, and it's wonderful.
And I'm not offended by you mentioning Gen X, because I'm a Gen Xer, so.
Right. It's just the baby boom generation is just so big, and I love them. So they've done so many good things for our country. It's just when there is a change, it's interesting to note, and I'm hoping that, you know, the folks that are in my generation are going to do a great job when they get up to the top.
If folks want to reach, you got constituents who want to reach out to you or call your office or find out about district hours, how can they do that?
So my aide is named Ann Audette. She's a wonderful lady.
Awesome.
You can call my office. You can speak to me or her. The State House number is 617-722-2210, 617-722-2210, and I'm extension 5. And hopefully we'll be there to answer your call, and if not, leave a message and we will get back to you.
Last question I'll ask you, and that is what are you thankful for this holiday season? If there's one thing that you could, or a series of things that you could express that you're thankful for, what would that be?
Oh, that's such an interesting question, because I'm thankful for so many things. I'm thankful for my health. I had a 46-year-old friend die of a massive stroke, who has a 6-year-old daughter and kids in their 20s just last week. I'm thankful for my family. I City Councilor Ann Audette just lost, Ann Beauregard just lost her mom this week.
Oh.
And thank God my mom is still with me. I'm thankful for being able to have a job, afford a house, live a good life, and for the city of Brockton. I'm thankful that they have put their trust in me as their state representative in West Bridgewater and East Bridgewater. And I'm going to work every day to do the best job I can.
Representative, thank you very much for joining us, and we will look forward to having you back on sometime after the new year, if that's okay.
I would love it, Kevin. Thank you so much. You do a great job, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. All right, well, we're going to step aside, and when we come back, I promise, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WPTV.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
For unique gift-giving this holiday season, step into the Emerald Isle Shop in Whitman Center. The Emerald Isle Shop boasts over 40 styles of loom sweaters from Aaron Crafts of County Kildare and McGee of Donegal for men, women, and kids. Made of soft merino wool, every stitch tells a story. From the diamond stitch wishing wealth and success to the honeycomb stitch said to bring good fortune, Nothing will keep you warmer than a loomed sweater from Ireland. The Emerald Isle Shop also offers unique Irish gifts. Scally hats, sterling silver jewelry, wool accessories, embroidered sweatshirts and jackets, rosaries, Barry's teas, and more. Shop Guinness merchandise from shirts to glassware and everything in between. At the Emerald Isle Shop, there's always something you can afford. The best prices west of Ireland. When you shop at the Emerald Isle Shop, you're shopping locally without the hassles of online shipping and returns. For quality, service, and pricing, wrap up in style at the Emerald Isle Shop, 16 South Ave, Route 27 in Whitman Center, and find them on Facebook.
I'm Mary Ellen from your CBD store in Hanover. With my background in health education here in the South Shore, I know all about managing chronic pain. The results I found from people in my life and from millions of other people across the country using CBD oil has led me to open your CBD store on Route 53 in Hanover. However, there's lots of misinformation about CBD. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp. Your CBD store of Hanover only sells products made from industrialized certified hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. There's absolutely no marijuana in products sold by your CBD store of Hanover. In fact, most of our products contain no THC. CBD has many targeted uses. Visit our boutique style store. We would love to explain how we can make it work for you. Your CBD store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD store of Hanover. Help without the high.
At Margaret's Sewing, Upholstery, and Furniture in Brockton, they will help you with all your sewing projects, upholstery repair, and window decor. They work on both commercial and residential projects. They've been creating for over 32 years many custom upholstery and curtains. Call 508-345-4165 or visit Margaret's Sewing, Upholstery, and Furniture.com and see how they can help you.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
It is the holiday season, as you have heard on WATD in the recent week or two. There are many organizations that are out there that are doing good, trying to ask for donations and assistance to help those who do not have, and it's fantastic. Whether it's organizations here in Marshfield, you got, of course, down in Plymouth, the big event over the weekend, the stuff in the bus. Here's another one. This one serving the Whitman area. I believe it was formerly the Toys for Tots organization until it was changed, and we'll get the full details of the story from our next guest. It's currently called the Whitman Area Toy Drive. And I'm probably incorrect with that name as well, because it has been expanded to mean so much more than just collecting toys or gifts for area kids. Joining us right now is the head elf, or one of the head elves for the Whitman Area Toy Drive, Donnie Westhaber, who has been my guest previously. I've actually done news stories with Donnie. Mr. Westhaber, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
How are you, Kevin?
We're doing pretty good. So I hope I was close with giving the description. I think it was some 20 plus years ago that it used to be Toys for Tots. Is that correct?
Well, it was 19. Actually, this year is the 19th year running the toy drive. The very first year was for the Toys for Tots program, and it was right after that we realized that the Toys for Tots program didn't have any Marine Reserve Corps units south of Boston or north of Plymouth, so I decided to change it to the Whitman Area Toy Drive so I would make sure that the folks, the families in Whitman, were taken care of first, and then anything I had left after that could go to surrounding towns. But since then, we went from probably 2 tables of toys to a good 50 10-foot tables of toys, and we could probably do that 2 to 3 times over between Thanksgiving and Christmas Eve.
That's fantastic. But it's expanded beyond just getting toys. I think there's been years that you've actually found ways to give meals to folks.
And you've expanded it even further to help those who might not be ambulant or who might be veterans. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. As a matter of fact, 7 years ago, we got help from Nike and a couple of clothes factories where we were able to supply hoodies and sweatpants and things like that. And then Costco's, a friend of mine working in the meat department, was able to get us turkeys and hams. So we expanded out to baskets where we would put the potatoes and carrots, a whole meal for them so they could have a meal for Christmas. Because one of our adages at that point was you can't eat a toy. So we wanted to make sure that the kids were taken care of with the toys and also the family was taken care of for a meal for Christmas. And then some 8 years ago now, I started the Whitman Wheels for Disabled Veterans and Citizens, where a friend of mine down at the VFW needed a powered wheelchair. I put it on Facebook. I was looking for one. And after I got that one, which I did get on Facebook, the call kept coming, do you need any more chairs? I said, well, why not? Why not take them and see if I can take care of homeless or vets with disabilities? And it's more from that point up to 8 years later, here we are, and I'm giving away wheelchairs, hospital beds, walkers, porta potties, canes, you name it, anything medical in that field. If it's needed, I have it. It goes out to disabled veterans and citizens alike. You don't have to be a veteran to get it, but that's where it started. Mobility equipment at no cost.
So, what? And how has it been received? Are you seeing the same growing success that the toy drive has seen?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, beyond my dreams anyway, Kevin, it gets to a point where I thought I'd be helping a couple of people out and that would be it. And now here I have two trailers full of medical equipment. And it's hard to say no to anybody when they want to ask you, when they ask you if you want any more equipment or they want to donate equipment. So I take what I can get and I try to find a place for it. But it comes in dribs and drabs. Once they know that there's an organization out there that they can get medical equipment, especially if they don't have the insurance to cover it or they don't have the means to purchase the equipment themselves, that they can come to my organization and get it from there. So rather than make them separate organizations, and all my organizations, by the way, are 501c3s. We're a nonprofit organization, so if they wanted to donate equipment, they can get it, they can claim it on their taxes. So I throw that out at people also. But it's just going to leaps and bounds, and it's something that's it's a runaway train, Kevin. I can't stop it at this point, I guess.
I started out talking, or started out the introduction by mentioning how successful the toy drive has been, and how you've grown it from just being toys to being so much more, and knowing the organization. I mean, has the success of having volunteers and having the organization blossom, is that still continued? Because you usually start just before Thanksgiving, right?
Well, we try to set the tables up before Thanksgiving, so we'll be ready to go right after Thanksgiving as far as giving out the toys concerned. The medical equipment end is all year round. It's 12 months out of the year, so they can get that anytime. But we have people that have donated money, gift cards, and toys even in the summertime, so we take those and we put them away until we're ready to go. The good thing about being able to set up early before Thanksgiving is that we can see what we have for toys. And when we get a lot of toys at the end of the Christmas season, right around the last week in December, that goes into the following year, which gives us a good head start without having to wait for toys before we're able to get the families in to take care of them.
What are your needs? What are the dire needs? Because I know the conversations we've had in the past, you usually do well with the younger kids.
Right.
Are you still having issues with the tweeners or the teens and trying to get
the tweeners? Yeah, the tweeners and the teens. As a matter of fact, every year that's the case. I think when people go out and they see our boxes out in stores, the first thing we do as adults is we think of anywhere from infants to maybe 6, 7, 8 years old. We don't realize that there are teenagers out there, and today it's much a lot different, as you all know, than it was yesteryear. They're not looking for Lincoln logs anymore. It's the age of electronics, so it's hard to try to figure out what to get for the 12 to 13, 16 year old. So that's where we rely on gift cards, and the monies that we get, we go out and buy at GameStop and things like that, at Dick's Sporting Goods. So if we can't provide certain things for that age, we can give them the family the gift card, and they can go and purchase the gift that they want for their child if we can't supply it. So, yes, so the teenagers, you're right. The 12 to 16 is where we had the hard time. So if there are people out there that are looking for what to buy them, the girls, makeup, arts and crafts, the boys, well, it could be anything on the teenage end, or, like I said, gift card to these special places, you know.
Again, we're speaking with Donnie Westhaver, one of the head elves over at the Whitman Area Toy Drive, which also does stuff to help veterans or folks who are in need of supplies, whether it's to help them to navigate or be more mobile than they may be or maybe may lack. Where are you in regards to that area as far as needing? Are you okay as far as receiving donations, whether it's monetary or equipment, or is that something that you're looking to bolster?
Are you talking about the medical equipment or the toy drive, Kevin?
I'm talking about the medical equipment, yeah.
The medical equipment. Well, what happens with the funds for the medical equipment, a lot of these chairs that we get, the power chairs, are made of batteries, and they're pretty expensive. So one chair, you can get up to $200 or $300 just in batteries alone. So I put that also in our account at the Rockland Trust under the Whitman Area Toy Drive, Whitman Wheels for Disabled Veterans. So we keep that money separate, knowing that that's the purpose. You know, we try to look at things like that. I don't usually purchase medical equipment, only batteries for the electrical ends of things. But it's the transport chairs that we have a hard time with. We get a lot of wheelchairs, the transport chairs for senior citizens that can't get around, and their family pushes them, you know, to go out to stores, maybe to the mall. And rather than try to put a full-length wheelchair in the car, they use these transport chairs, which are much smaller and easier to handle. And I know that, you know, it's funny, when I started this 8 years ago, Kevin, I get it because of a friend, a friend who was disabled. I wasn't disabled myself at the time, so I am now in the last couple of years because of complications due to surgery. And I see the need more now than ever before. It's such an eye-opening experience, and both physically and mentally, for me. So I know just how they feel when they receive this equipment. So that hits me in the heartstrings, as well as the toy drive. So I don't know if I could take on a third different type of organization, but I'm pretty busy with the toy drive and the Whitman Wheels right now. So that's something I'll continue to do as long as I'm here.
And you anticipated my segue, because I was going to mention that, you know, a couple of years ago, as of a few years ago, that there was, they had, you know, the organization had to lean on one less head elf to be able, and you had Jane and a group of other folks that I are, you know, I don't know everybody's name, but I know that you know that there's a group of folks who mobilized in your, you know, your absence to make sure that this kept moving forward. So, and I was going to mention about the fact that you had complications, and you yourself are trying to regain, you know, your lower body mobility. But so you understand this probably more so than most people.
Oh, you bet. You know, but you talked about a couple of years ago when this happened. Jane Clark, she's my other part. She's been with me 8 years now. She took over the reins when I get hurt. When this happened to me, my mobility problem, and with her and my daughter Sherry and Paul Colgate, those and Ryan O'Rourke. I think actually so many people right here in Whitman have jumped right in, and my main committee right now, and have taken over. Not so much the reins, but it's taken a lot of pressure off of me where I can't just get up and run around and do the things I used to do. Mm-hmm. But they get me around. And when I was in Spalding Hospital for my rehab due to my paralysis, I had to get out that Christmas of 2017. And they said, well, we can't let you out. But they finally let me out with some help from the hospital, and they drove me down. They said, we'll let you out for a couple of hours. So I wasn't able to miss that Christmas that I haven't missed in the 16 or 17 years that I was doing it at that time. So that was a big thing for me. And since then, I've been down. As a matter of fact, yesterday I was down there. I took care of six families And I've been on the phone pretty much even all morning now, you know, getting families' names and numbers, what we have to do. The other thing I want to mention, Kev, was last year we took over the food pantries families because they were running out of room and space and time around Christmas to take care of these families because they're so busy with the food end of it. And they said, can you take over our families for your drive? Because after they saw what I could do down there, they thought I could handle it. I said, yeah. So, well, we took over last year, and it's going again this year. So we'll probably have the food pantry from now on top of the families that we do. And we do anywhere between 500, 600, 700 with Detroit, with the food pantry families now. We're really out there. And I believe that we're one of the top of the biggest toy drives in the South Shore right now, from what I understand.
Again, we've got a few more minutes left here with Donnie Westhaver of the Whitman Area Toy Drive. So, Donnie, probably one of my last final questions here would be, knowing that there's a little more than 15 days until Christmas, until the holiday season hits here, is there a greater need or is there a way for folks to reach out to you if they have something that they want to donate, whether it is a check, whether it is a gift?
I mean, again, we do have an account under Whitman Area Toy Drive at Rockland Trust Bank if they wanted to donate directly, or they could send it to my house here at 151 Pine Street in Whitman. If they're looking to try to get in touch with me, they could call. I have an answering machine. It's 781-447-6883. And I will get back to them after I listen to the message. Or, you know, if they find it tough trying to figure out how to get to me, they can ask any school, the police, fire, churches in Whitman. They're all sponsoring us. And I might add one more thing, Kevin. On December 15th, we're having a Filter Cruiser at the police department's parking lot outside. It's our fourth year doing it. We get tons of toys that day. They fill four or five cruisers full of toys. So that would be from 9 to 1 on
So this coming Saturday. This coming Saturday, you're going to stuff the cruiser.
If that's the 15th, I thought it was Sunday for some reason, but maybe it is Saturday.
No, you're right. Sunday the 15th.
Okay. All right. So that's okay. But, yeah, it'll be some 15th from 9 to 1, right outside the police station, right in their parking lot. We'll have tents up, rain or shine. That's what it will be, unless we may go down to the pavilion if it's really terrible weather. We'll have it inside. Other than that, that's where we'll be. And we look forward to that, too. So if anybody wants to come down and donate money, toys, gift cards, that would be a good day to do it also.
Yeah, it doesn't pay to try to quickly look at your calendar and try to guesstimate. Because I had my calendar open on my phone, and I'm kind of looking at it as you're mentioning so I can kind of help folks. So, again, as Donnie had said correctly, it's this coming Sunday, the 15th. If you have a toy, definitely bring it down there. Or as Donnie had stated, his phone number, he's quick to answer it. And like I was talking to him earlier today, and he's like, the phone's been ringing off the hook, which is great, which means that folks know that there's a place to go if there's a need, or if they have something that they want to feel, if they feel they're feeling generous, that they can donate, that they're going to reach out in that means. I want to thank you so much for joining me, and I want to thank you and the other elves over at the Whitman Area Toy Drive for all that they do.
Oh, you bet, Kevin. We take pride in taking care of our families and our community, so that will never stop. But thank you very much for the interview.
And we will definitely be back in touch. Please, I hope things will continue to be successful as they. It seems like every year when I talk to you afterwards, I like what I hear, and I hear that usually doing well afterwards. But I don't want to put the cart before the horse and anticipate everything, because things are cyclical. I'm sure that over the 19 years, you've had really good years and you've had slow years. And, you know, I don't know where things are at this moment, but I don't want to do anything to jinx the process.
No, you wouldn't, Kevin. I mean, it's typical. It happens. There are a lot of families out there that are doing well after a couple of years of coming to us, and they come back to us and they bring toys to us to pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And so it's different. I haven't had a year yet where we've had under 400, and I haven't had a year where we've gone over 7. So that seems to give you an idea of the type of years we have and the families that are in need of help.
And again, repeat the phone number for folks to know.
781-447-6883. That's my home number. It's the answering machine. It will pick up. All they have to do is leave the name, number, and what they're looking for, the situation. And I may not be able to get back right away because we are busy, but I will get back to them before Christmas, and they'll be guaranteed to get a toy or two or three.
There he is, Donnie Westhaver, one of the head elves over at the Whitman Area Toy Drive. As I said at the start of this segment, I know that there's a lot of asks that you've been hearing on this radio station in the past week or two. Please keep in mind this one as well, especially if you are closer to the Brockton area, the Whitman area toy drive. It's a bona fide effort to help folks who are in need, especially whether it's children or folks who are not ambulant. Please consider it. Well, we're going to step aside. Next is hour number two of Monday Night Talk. We'll speak with Brockton City Councilor Wynn Farwell right after the top of the hour break. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WMEX Quincy, WBMS Brockton, and Translator W266DA Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
You know what? Toys are good for Christmas. In fact, essential, wouldn't you say?
I'm Dave.
I'm Peter.
And we're having a party with the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce for Toys for Tots.
Toys for Tots.
And we'd love you to come.
And where is it?
It's at Alden Park, Colony Place.
Colony Place, why?
Because we really needed a big place for a really big party.
And what does it cost to get in?
An unwrapped toy.
Wow, that's a pretty good deal, I would say.
It is.
When is it again?
This Thursday the 12th at Alden Park, and we're going to have hors d'oeuvres, we're going to have live music, we're going to have Santa.
And it starts at 6.
And goes to when?
Goes till way late.
Like way late until we get more toys.
How many more toys you want?
Lots of toys, so it won't be late.
Please come.
Please come. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
At Margaret Sewing, Upholstery, and Furniture in Brockton, they will help you with all your sewing projects, upholstery repair, and window decor. They work on both commercial and residential projects. They've been creating for over 32 years many custom upholstery and curtains. Call 508-345-4165 or visit Margaret Sewing, Upholstery, and Furniture.com and see how they can help you.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We are back for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Later this hour, we will speak with a best-selling author, Casey Sherman, will be my guest. If you have not had a chance to read some of his latest columns in regards to Alan Dershowitz, a famed professor in Harvard. You want to stay tuned for that conversation. We also can do a little bit of a checkup with Casey as to some of his latest projects, as he does have a book coming out early next year. But right now, we turn our focus to our guest for this segment. He's a gentleman who has been on many, many times. We've actually thought about doing our own podcast somewhere down the road, the Wynn and Tachi podcast or something like that, as usually this good conversation. And I feel it can be compelling at times, depending on the topic that we are talking about. Although some folks may scratch their head and go, how compelling can a municipality be? Well, there's so many layers to government. So, you know, when we have a chance to have a conversation and get in depth to a community here on the South Shore, I find it compelling. Maybe I'm in the minority on that. So joining us right now, he is a former school committee member, former mayor, and just reelected to another term on the Brockton City Council. We have Mr. Wynn Falwell joining us. Mr. Falwell, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. Pleasure to be here tonight. And as long as they use the word compelling and not confusing, then perhaps we're ahead of the curve.
That is correct, as long as we are ahead of the curve. It's fantastic to be able to chat with you, knowing that here we are on the back end of a legislative term for you, and with a new one on the horizon. What were the city elections like for you this time around? And knowing that we have a new mayor who will be sworn in, was it January 6th?
Yes, Monday, January 6th. It really was a great election cycle because you had new people running, particularly at large, and you had, because of the tragic death of Mayor Carpenter, you had an open mayoral seat, meaning that there was no incumbent running. So I think the dialogue, I think the dynamics change when it's an open mayoral seat. And I think having so many women running for office, I now have two female colleagues as councilors at large, along with Mayor Rodriguez, who is returning to city government now as a councilor at large. So it really was a great great campaign. I think the results for the city are very positive, and great things will happen in the next 2 years.
So talk to me, if I want to make sure I don't overlook the job that the 49th mayor did before we see the swearing in of the 50th mayor, which is Mr. Robert Sullivan, who served on the council with you and is taking over that leadership role as mayor. Moses Rodriguez, who is going to be rejoining you, but I think he did a tremendous job serving as the mayor for the past, 5 months?
Yes, since the first week in July. You know, you can't underestimate the exceptional job that Moises did, and I say that for a couple of reasons. Number one, he went in and he did not suddenly allow the position, the title, the power and authority to go to his head. He tried to pick up exactly where city government was and then push it along, push the issues, push the projects, push the priorities along that had already been in place, and in a non-confrontational way. I mean, he will hold people accountable. One of the things I thought was very positive was reminding people to, you know, dress at least business professional when you're at City Hall, and you know, maybe not walk through the halls with flip-flops and other attire that you might see outside of the workplace, because you want to set a tone. You want people to realize we're there, we're providing services, and our employees are professional and earning the salaries that they're paid. And those little things that he tweaked and those things that he has pushed forward, for example, finally settling the issue of Aquaria, who's going to pay what and getting a better deal for the residents. You can't minimize that. And, you know, thinking about city government after January 6th, you'll have a new mayor with long-term experience, a lawyer, someone with an MBA. You're going to have two former mayors on the council, Mayor Rodriguez, and you can learn a lot in 6 months, trust me, as well as my service there. and then you're going to have other counselors, Rita Mendez, who is a counselor at large, coming in, and Jeff Thompson, who is going to be the Ward 5 counselor. They're both attorneys. So I think it's going to be a very collegial, thoughtful, and I hope successful 2 years.
It's interesting you said that, and it hadn't dawned on me the veteran experience that is going to be on the city council, not only as veterans of that governing body, but also those who have served as the city CEO in the past, yourself in the 90s, but somebody who has been part of city government. You are one of the few who has served in each governing capacity, as I mentioned with your introduction, being a school committee member, being the mayor, now serving as city council. You've been on all sides of the table when it comes to various issues and conversations, so that will lend a hand in certain situations, knowing that Moses is kind of bridging the gap. It's not like we're, you know, if someone is voted out of office and they kind of just disappear from public eye. You actually have that individual returning to a governing body to be able to provide insight and also connect the dots on certain situations moving forward over the next 2 years, which I think is tremendous.
Well, it is, and let's remember that the mayor, by city charter, is automatically a member of the school committee,
right,
and the chairperson. So Moises will have 6 months experience dealing with schools, school staff, school issues, school financing, policy making to affect almost 18,000 students and all of our staff. So, every time I see him, I joke and I say, Mr. Mayor, you've gotten an education in 6 months that you wouldn't get in Harvard in four years, and we both laugh about it.
But see, that's fantastic. And what do you feel are some of the, you got the outgoing mayor, but with Robert Sullivan coming in, again, it's fantastic that it's not like he's just someone who's new off the street. I kind of equate it to when Jimmy Harrington ran for mayor. He was somebody who had many years on the city council, made that, he graduated from the city council to being the mayor. Linda Belzotti, same thing. What do you feel that some of the things that Robert Sullivan is going to be tackling or looking to tackle in his first 100 days, or should I say it, the first term?
Well, immediately upon being sworn in, the first thing he's going to have to think about is the fiscal year 2021 budget. And I know he will euphemistically marry himself to the chief financial officer and the department heads to get a handle on what finances are going to be required to at least provide a level services budget for FY 2021. That's a task which is always challenging in Brockton because our finances are constrained. Hopefully that's going to be ameliorated somewhat by additional aid to education, which I think is going to be tremendous for a gateway city like Brockton and with a diverse student population. But then he'll have other issues, how to improve public safety, how to look at some infrastructure issues that need to be addressed. The mayor's office is kind of a focal point for public safety, public education, environmental issues, public works projects, economic development, accountability in government, making sure that all of our various departments are working efficiently and effectively to provide services to our residents, which they deserve, by the way. And I mentioned during the campaign several times, government doesn't exist without the men and women of our community paying taxes, paying fees, paying water and sewer bills. And I might add, we're helped by all the other residents in the Commonwealth by state income taxes they pay. We get back some of that money in grants. The lottery, obviously, is a very major source of income to us. So we owe the residents a lot. And Bob Sullivan, knowing him and watching him, he will always act in the best interests of the residents, not in his best interests, not in some special group or friend, but he kind of has a global view of, okay, here's Brockton, how do we help everyone have a better quality of life? And I think that's pretty impressive.
So if I was to think of a couple of key things, knowing that there have been changes, and again, not only as the CEO of the city of Brockton, but other things, longstanding things, the Shaw Center. There was just a recent article in regards to what's being done with that. I know that's been something a lot of people have been asking. What do we do with this? And it was something that on the tail end of before Carpenter's passing, there was a conversation about that. What are your thoughts on projects like that and other items that are going on in and around the downtown area when we're talking about government?
Well, I can't speak for the mayor or the mayor-elect, and I think he deserves to, and I'm sure he will, outline some challenges and some directions that he'd like to follow in his inaugural speech. But I, just from my observations of him, I think he will continue economic development in a very careful and controlled way. I think he'll continue to push the projects that are underway, particularly in the downtown area, with the Ganley building coming down and the state investing millions of dollars down there. We have some other private developments that are going on, which I think will be very beneficial. Again, I'm going to refer back to the budget, because that's the whole underpinning of whatever a community wants to do and is capable of doing. I'm sure public safety will be at the forefront, how to make sure that we keep up with officers retiring and replacing them, as well as augmenting the number of people on the police department and fire department. He, as much experience as Bob has, his first 6 months in office are really going to open his eyes. Because as much as you think you know what the mayor does, because I've been in that position, you really learn a lot, and you have to learn it fast.
You know, two key components to, I think, any municipality is education and also economic development. And in two areas of the city, we know that we have a new school superintendent in Mike Thomas, and I think recently selected as the executive director of the Old Colony Planning Council, Mary Waldron. Give me your thoughts about having new components in that area for not only the mayor but the city to be working with. Do you see anything different in regards to moving forward, whether it's a school budget or talking about getting roads and things done when it comes to economic development?
I think any time you have people in key positions who have a history with the city, a knowledge of the city, an understanding of the city and all of its components, that is very, very beneficial. Just imagine if we had brought in a superintendent from perhaps outside the Brockton area. Some districts bring people in from outside the state, as talented and as educated and as experienced as they may have been. They wouldn't have the Brockton flavor. They wouldn't have the understanding of what the community really is all about. They'd have to spend some time doing that. And so with Mary Waldron and with Mike Thomas, you have people who are fully invested and certainly experienced and knowledgeable about the city, and that is really going to help the mayor.
Yeah, we're speaking with the at-large counselor from the city of Brockton, Wynn Falwell, who is our guest for this particular segment. And I want to kind of go into, you were talking about budgeting recently. There was the fun thing that always happens in December, the tax classification hearing and to set the tax rate. But I think a lot of people don't understand the whole process of tax classification, the hearings and how it works. Could you give us kind of a Cliff's Notes version for folks who might just be tuning in or might not have a full understanding of how it works?
Boy, you've challenged me before, but let me give it a shot, and here's where we may get confusing. But
okay.
Every December, the city council meets and sets the tax rate. In Brockton, we have different classifications. We have commercial, residential, industrial, and some communities don't. They have one single tax rate, which covers both residential and commercial. I've said that this is always the vote I hate to take, even though it's required, because this is where I literally reach into someone's house and reach into their wallet and decide how much money they're going to have to pay for the fiscal year's taxes. So we met, and This year, there was a slight change in favor of businesses, which means that on an average family of about $280,000 single-family home, they're going to pay about $212 more for their taxes. Now, the problem with that, Kevin, is that instead of having four tax payments, four quarterly payments to make up the arrearage, they only have two. So that $210 or $220 has to be made up in two payments. It'll come out in the third and fourth quarter payments. Most people, I suspect, have their taxes escrowed, so that means in a year or so, the lending institution will come back and probably say your escrow account is short, and so your monthly payment is going to go up for the next 12 months, or you can make a balloon payment to offset it. So that's where we were. We held the we held the tax classification and tax rate setting meeting, and we by a vote of 7-3, I was one of the three that voted no. There was a slight shift in favor of businesses, and unfortunately, our residents, again, many of whom have had an increase in valuation on their homes, will see a slight increase of about $220. If you have a larger home, then obviously that increase may be much more.
When you when this exercise has to be done annually, how often, what is the feedback, either yourself or your colleagues here, after the vote, or even prior to the vote? I mean, do you kind of get feedback from folks that help you kind of make a decision? Or is it once you've taken a vote, then you kind of get the feedback?
Well, to add a touch of humor, I think the majority of people say, okay, the 11 Grinches got together, and just before Christmas, they stuck it to us, and we're going to have to pay a little more. However, I will say there are three or four people I hear from that literally live paycheck to paycheck. They're on Social Security, or they have a small pension from a private company, or they have a modest but not excessive 401k or some type of a savings plan, and they always lament that for the coming year now, I'm going to have to make choices that I really don't want to make because it impacts how I live. It impacts my quality of life. And for those people, I genuinely feel badly because they don't have an opportunity to increase their income. I am pro-business, but I'm also very much pro-resident and pro-taxpayer. And our residents and taxpayers in this particular city, if you look at the demographics, do not have a lot of disposable income. They don't have that cushion that many people have in other communities where they can absorb these different increases in taxes, homeowners insurance, fuel oil, food, pharmaceuticals. So many of our residents struggle, Kevin, and I'm always mindful of that.
Okay, we're speaking with Brockton City Councilor, at-large Councilor Wynn Falwell. We've got a few more minutes here to chat with him. Have you had a chance to get out and get involved with the holiday events or partake in getting ready for the holidays, Christmas, per se?
Yes, we have begun some shopping. I will say the holiday parade this year was exceptional. You just love to see the kids come through on the floats. It's that event, I would say, annually, which really jump-starts the thinking that, okay, Christmas is coming, Thanksgiving is past. In this case, it was 2 days prior, and it just sets the tone. We do have coming up December 14th, a week from now, we have the 125th celebration of City Hall. I was actually in office for the 100th. Never thought I would be back 25 years later to see the next one, and there is going to be entertainment, there's going to be a cash bar, there's going to be an opportunity to see the inside of that magnificent building. That will help with the festivities for the holiday. And then, in a blink of an eye, it'll be January 6th, and you'll have an entirely new city government sworn in. So a lot will be compressed into the next 3.5 weeks.
You know, I think that the fun part is seeing a lot of the events that do take place, and I know a lot of them usually kick off with the Greater Brockton Holiday Parade, And usually it's so festive. And knowing that you get a guy like a John Marion, who has for years pushed for the city to be recognized before having the first department store, Santa, and making this making the city a festive place to be. I mean, how important is it for the Brockton to have a positive ways to be reflected upon, other than when you turn on the news and there's something that's taken place that, you know, one of the big news stations are down here to cover?
Well, I think the sad part about Brockton is that we're the only city in Plymouth County, so when something happens here, people say, "Oh, yeah, that's Brockton. That's the city that that has, let's say, a particular problem." But the fact is, it goes on everywhere, and that's it's frustrating to me that when the headlines read that they hold a drug bust or some crime occurs in another community, it's seems to be forgotten, but when it happens here in Brockton, it's almost like we're tattooed with that imprint of what happened. And look, we have issues here, we have challenges, but every single day people come in, either elected officials, appointed officials, people who work for the city, and they do the very best they can to provide a quality of life for over 100,000 people. And on balance, if people lived here, if they had a chance to travel through the city, visit businesses, go to restaurants, I think they would have an entirely different viewpoint of who we are and what we're all about. But you know what? That's a challenge on us. I think those of us in public life need to do more to point out all of the firsts, some of which you just mentioned, mm-hmm. in the city, and really portray the city in a much more favorable light, because the city is historical. I think it's small enough to be enjoyed. It's not Boston with 42 square miles. And it's a shame that we're still fighting that image.
If I was to ask you the one thing that you are thankful for this holiday season, whether it's on a municipal level or on a personal level, what would you say you're thankful for?
Well, it's clearly my family, and, you know, forgive me for beating my chest and being so proud, but my daughter, who was married last April, found out in July that she was pregnant, and we're going to have another grandchild on or about March 6th. We're going to have a girl, and, you know, if she comes a little late, it might be a St. Patrick's Day baby, and if she comes a little early, it might be February 29th, which would be interesting. So I'm most grateful for my family and especially the new arrival that's pending. But second to family and faith, it's fun serving. I mean, you either love public service or you don't. And for those of us who enjoy it, it's very rewarding.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. And you and I have had many, many conversations they've been... I feel privileged that I have such a great relationship with many who are in local government, who are willing to have, whether we're having conversations here on the radio or we just happen to be bumping into each other at an event somewhere, that I'm able to have those conversations and continue those conversations. And I think what I'm trying to say here is that I'm appreciative for elected officials like yourself, who are willing to come on radio programs or talk to newspapers, be transparent, or at least be able to share your viewpoint, explain your viewpoint, or at least be able to break something down for folks at home who may not have the full scope of what's going on, and help them be better informed as well. So I want to thank you for being that person, being one of many in local government who go above and beyond.
Well, it you know, it's not rocket science. Just do the best you can, make the best decision for your community, and if you make a mistake and screw up, admit it, and then try to do your best to correct it. And if you follow those simple parameters, I think most of us can be fairly successful.
Anything you want to say to kind of wrap up this quick segment? I'm going into 26 minutes here as we're getting closing in on the bottom of the hour. Anything you want to kind of say in closing?
Well, to all of the listeners, I think radio still provides the best, most unfiltered opportunity to get information out. I am not convinced that television and the print media always covers things with the depth and understanding that issues should be covered. And I think having these live conversations is very beneficial. So to all of your listeners, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And it's always a pleasure to come on, Kevin.
And it's also worth noting to let folks know that 1460 WBMS broadcasting. Also, I think there's an FM translator as well. It's up and running, and I think it's going to be launched in a solo. It'll have its own programming come the first of the year, as will we have its sister station, WMEX. Those are things to watch for, but, we're going to be looking for more programming for WBMS, so it's something to keep in mind for the Brockton folks.
Excellent. Well, as I say, at least with conversations, you can ask questions, you can be interactive, and you can't do that when you're watching a television or reading a newspaper. So, many thanks for letting me come on tonight. I always enjoy it, Kevin. And my best to you and your family for the holidays.
Amen. Thank you so much, Sharon. And back at you. And the new edition. I didn't realize that it's kind of interesting knowing that these days you can, there was a time and a day and a time when you had to wait until the child was born to know what it is. And with technology, well, we can find out just like that.
Well, we had a gender reveal party. None of us knew. It was a sealed envelope given to a cake maker. And we said, look, you open the envelope. You make the cake, you put the right color frosting in the middle, seal up the envelope, give it back, I'll pick up the cake. Then we had a party at a local restaurant, we cut into the cake, and sure enough, the slicing machine came out pink, so we knew it was going to be a little girl, and they've already chosen the name. Her name is going to be Hope, and it'll be Hope Hathaway Joyce, because Allison's married name is Joyce, and... I can't wait. Listen, the inaugural is important, but that honor about March 6th has got me captivated.
Yeah, it's nothing better than being a grandparent. It's almost like you get to rent the child, spoil it, and then you send it back to it to your children.
No, listen, if you talk to most grandparents, and they have grandchildren who are 3 and 4 years old, they can grab your cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
They can do things on that device that you sometimes can't do as quickly yourself. It is amazing how advanced children are now at an early age.
It is. Well, listen, continued success. I'm looking forward to more conversations with you in the new year. And good luck to the new city council and the new mayor and new members of the school committee.
Thank you, Kevin. Have a great night.
You got it. All right, we're going to step aside. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk on deck. Casey Sherman. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, I'm Jim from Your CBD Store of Hanover. I've been a small business owner on the South Shore for 20 years. The results I've found from people in my life and from millions of other people across the country using CBD oil has led me to open Your CBD Store on Route 53 in Hanover. However, there's lots of misinformation about CBD. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp. Your CBD Store of Hanover only sells products made from industrialized certified hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. There's absolutely no marijuana in products sold by Your CBD Store of Hanover. In fact, most of our products contain no THC. CBD has many targeted uses. Come visit our boutique-style store. We would love to explain how we can make it work for you. Your CBD Store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD Store of Hanover. Help without the high.
Payroll, payroll, payroll. What's a company to do? Hi, I'm Patty Dunnigan, one of the owners at BizCheck's Payroll Service. It used to be changes in payroll processes were far and few between. Lately, the state and federal governments are blasting out changes to payroll. Sick hours, ACA, paid medical, family leave, EMAC, minimum wage increases, and more. How does a small to medium-sized business stay on top of these changes and rising costs? At BizCheck's, we offer the same services as the large national payroll providers. HR, time and attendance, employee employee self-service for significantly less. One of our newest clients is now saving over $9,000 a year. We educate our clients on changes and how they will affect their company. At BizChecks, you have a dedicated specialist who knows you and your business. BizChecks, local, affordable, educated, experienced, and professional. Discover the BizChecks difference. Call 866-932-9700 for a price and a discussion about your payroll future. Visit our new web, bizchexpayroll.com.
All year long, you want to give a little extra. Toys for Tots in Plymouth has your chance to do exactly that. When you're Christmas shopping, simply pick up one extra toy and give it. Plymouth Fire Department and Firefighters Local 1768 are collecting donations for their 13th annual Toys for Tots. Through December 21st, you can drop unwrapped, age-appropriate toys at Station 1 headquarters at 114 Sandwich Street in Plymouth and Station 6 Cedarville at 2209 State Road in Plymouth. If you live closer to Marshfield, feel free to drop your donation off at the WATD office during business hours. We're at 130 Enterprise Drive in Marshfield. While toys for children of any age are greatly appreciated, teenagers are often overlooked, and they would appreciate receiving some holiday cheer as well. This is the 13th annual Toys for Tots Drive run by the Plymouth Fire Department and Firefighters Local 1768. Just one extra toy when you're out shopping, donated to Toys for Tots, will mean so much to children in your own community. Thank you.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. And it's good to have in studio joining me a good friend, best-selling author, Boston Herald columnist. He's got so many different titles, so many different things and projects that he's working on. But I'm fortunate to have him here to kind of talk about breaking news that broke this afternoon and the passing of Pete Frates. And I've had Casey in here. I've had his partner, writing partner, Dave Wedge, and we've talked about Pete Frates, the book that you wrote, the in-depth conversations you had with Pete and his wife, Julie, and the family. Pete's family. Where were you when you finally heard, when you heard the news of his passing?
Well, you know, I've been preparing for the news for about a week. Pete went into hospice last Wednesday, and I was told by the family that was what was happening at the time, because his health had taken a significant downward turn over the past 48 hours. So every day I'd wake up, look at the sun, and hope that Pete was still fighting. And he fought for almost an entire week, because that's the kind of guy he is. He's the ultimate fighter. And he finally let go today, and he was surrounded by his beautiful family, a family that's supported him throughout his entire life, not since his diagnosis, but he was surrounded by a lot of love. And I keep seeing things on online and social media, and it's the usual tributes, RIP Pete Frates. And I wrote a little something different. I said, Pete, don't rest in peace, because he never rested at all. I said, continue to show us beautiful sunrises where we can hope. Continue to provide us thunderclaps to get us moving in the right direction, and continue to show us beautiful stars where, we can dream. And the fight was Pete's fight for so many years. Now it's become the fight for all of us. And none of us should rest until there is a cure for ALS. And as you know, Kevin, it's dubbed Lou Gehrig's disease because of great Yankee that succumbed to that disease back in the 1930s, 40s. But it will be known as Pete Frates' cure. That I can guarantee you.
I will tell you, when I first was hearing the news, the first thing that I responded, I was like, somebody had told me, I'm like, well, let me do a little research, because there had been reports previously that he had passed.
Yeah, there had been one report by an overzealous journalist, the disgraced Boston Globe columnist Mike Barnicle, who now is a talking head on MSNBC. A few years ago, he tweeted out that Pete Frates was dead. I think it was RIP Pete Frates. And the whole world ran with it. Didn't vet it, didn't research the story as they should have. And I remember that day, I woke up because I knew Pete was in the hospital. He was at Mass General, and I talked to his mother, Nancy Frady, who's an amazing woman and a great story in herself, the night before, and Pete was sick. And when I woke up and heard on the radio that Pete had passed, I believed it. And I texted Nancy. I just said, you know, Dave, Wedge, and myself, we're here for you if you need us. And she called me right back. She said, can you get out on social media and tell the world that Pete's not dead? Because he wasn't. And the scary thing about that, you know, rush to judgment from a news perspective, Kevin, is that for 10 minutes, John and Nancy, Pete's parents, thought Pete was dead as well. Because they couldn't get in touch with his caregiver at Mass General because she was dealing with the situation at the time. For a sliver of time, they believed that their son was dead. And just to show you what a great sense of humor Pete Frady's has, a couple of days later, he videotaped himself with his brother Andrew in Mass General with, you know, eyes wide open, literally dancing in his wheelchair to the Pearl Jam song Alive. Pearl Jam was his favorite band, and it just, that was his answer or his response to this overwhelming story. But you know, later on I told Pete and his family, I said, you know, you're very lucky because you're the only one or just one of a select few that got to read your obituary before you had actually passed, and you got to see all the love that people have across the world for you and what you've been able to do for ALS.
For folks who don't know, you and Dave put a lot of effort into. How did you come to be called upon? How did it all go that you met with Pete Frady's and was able to pen his story?
Well, you know, it was, all right, 2016, the finest hours is about to hit the big screen. So I'm running all around the country, attending premieres and screenings and, basically enjoying the culmination of that hard work. And a mutual friend of mine in the Frady's family reached out to me and they said, the Frady's want to meet you. And they believe that Pete's got a great story to tell. And they think you're the guy to tell it. And I honestly, Kevin, I didn't have a lot of time to spare for a meeting like this. And I didn't know anything about ALS besides doing the ice bucket challenge with my kids in 2014, dumping the ice water on my head and sending off a check or cash of $100 to the ALS Association. And then I found out that Pete lived in Beverly, Massachusetts, which is on the North Shore. So getting a South Shore guy like me, a Marshfield guy, to drive across Boston and to Beverly was like asking me to go to the moon. But on a Sunday in February of 2016, I called my partner Dave Wedge, and we'd been looking for another project to write after Boston Strong, which eventually became Patriots Day. And I said, Dave, let's take this drive together, and we're either going to meet a great family and have a great cup of coffee with them, or we're going to have our next project. So I remember going into the house. First thing I did when I entered the Frady's home is I spilled a large cup of Dunkin' Donuts hot coffee right on their wood floor. So that was a great introduction of myself, Jerry Lewis as a writer, into the Frady's family. And I remember going up to Pete, and Pete at that point, Pete that I'd read about was a Boston College baseball star, strapping athlete. He'd run triathlons. He was the apex of what male athleticism was. But by the time I met him, he was in his wheelchair. He couldn't communicate, and he was withering. And I remember going up to him just because I hadn't done any research on ALS, and I talked very loudly, Kevin, and I said, "Hi, I'm Casey Sherman, Pete. It's great to meet you." And he had this incredulous look on his face, like telling me, "Hey, dummy, my hearing's just fine." And what I realized afterwards is that, ALS attacks the body. It does not attack the mind. That's always the last to go. And I remember over the next couple of hours, we met with John and Nancy Frady's, Pete's parents, Andrew Frady's, Pete's brother, Julie Frady's, Pete's gorgeous, saintful wife. And they are falling over one another, telling us great stories about Pete, and they were all very passionate about it. And I kind of forgot Pete was even in the room because he's silent and he's off in the distance. And suddenly my cell phone starts to buzz and I get a notification from Facebook, which is the way that Pete communicates. And it said, would you take a message from Pete Frates? And I hold the phone up to my face and I look over and there's this figure in the corner. I'm like, that Pete Frates? I'll take it. And I open up my screen and there was one word, all in capital letters with three exclamation points, and it said bull bleep. And what that told me was, I said, oh my God, here's a guy that's listening to every word that's being said about him, and he wanted Dave Wedge and I to know that, you know, I'm not the hero that my family makes me out to be. I struggle with a very debilitating disease, yep. And it's not all triumphant, you know, mountainous peaks. For every peak, there are five very desolate valleys. And he said to us, if you want to tell that story very honestly, I'll take you through my journey. And I said at that point, okay, we're in.
See, I never had a chance to meet a Pete Frates. I did participate, actually, as a mini tribute. I actually took a screenshot of the video that they did
that
many years ago. Actually, what you didn't get a chance to see in the video is that after I dumped the bucket over my head, my significant other, Sandy, and her daughter snuck out with a bigger thing and dumped it over my head.
Oh, that's great.
It was awesome. It was kind of a twofer. But it was just my little tribute to, not only to Pete Frates, but to the folks who are enduring this. Because I actually have a group of friends who watched their loved one go through ALS and watched them go from a strapping individual to eventually succumbing to this disease. And I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And to know that a Pete Frates was able to mobilize our culture in such a way to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, to raise awareness, it was an honor just to be able to be a part of it, not knowing that I was a part of a phenomenon,
right,
that is Pete Frates, and to the awareness of this disease, that something needs to be done.
Well, you know, Kevin, you're a part of his story, and I think we all are a part of his story.
Correct.
Anybody that, participated in that Ice Bucket Challenge in 2014, which has raised over $220 million for ALS research. Now, before the Ice Bucket Challenge, Kevin, only about $3 million was raised annually for what was called a niche disease. The greatest scientists in American medical research weren't going into that type of research because that's not where the money was. They were going to cancer and these other bigger diseases that affect a lot more people. But, Pete wanted to really be the face of ALS when he was diagnosed. Now, Lou Gehrig, when he was diagnosed, the last time we saw Lou Gehrig was at Yankee Stadium, where he said he was, the luckiest man on the face of the earth. But what we didn't see during that very heartfelt speech was that before he gave that speech, he was given all of these awards by these, various organizations in New York. And he could never hold up these awards because he was too weak. So they had to put them on the grass at Yankee Stadium. But the last time we saw Lou Gehrig, he was still virile. He was still young, and he was still Lou. Nobody got to see him suffer, which is, part of the reason why this disease has not been cured in almost 100 years. Pete wanted to flip the switch on that. He wanted everybody to see what he was going through every day, everybody to see the suffering, because he's told me and Dave Wedge, until they see it, that we're not going to be able to raise enough money to cure it.
Okay, we're speaking with Casey Sherman, a best-selling author. He and Dave Wedge writing the Ice Bucket Challenge book. It's worth also noting, and if you want to delve into it, that this work being done to do a movie, correct?
Yeah, and in the book we wrote called The Ice Bucket Challenge, it's available on Amazon, and the proceeds go to help with Pete's health care, because his family owes hundreds of thousands of dollars for his home health care. So the proceeds go to help with that. So anybody that wants to go on Amazon and learn, just read a great story, but also know that you're actually helping Pete's family kind of get out from this tremendous hole that they're in right now, would be very beneficial for the family, and I think beneficial to anybody that wants to read it. Now, as we leapfrog from the book to the movie, everything that kind of Dave and I touches, has a big screen element to it. And usually Hollywood comes looking for us, which is a great position to be in. Not that everything we touch becomes a movie, because that's an entire process unto itself. But just the fact that we're now engaged with Netflix, which has been developing a movie based on our book for about a year and a half. Casey Affleck, the Oscar winner and a good friend of mine, is a co-producer on the project. There was a time where he wanted to play Pete in the film. He's a little too old, to play Pete right now. So we're probably going to be looking for somebody a little younger, in his late 20s. Mm. And because you want to see, Pete as he was when he was diagnosed. And Pete, even when he was in a wheelchair, he still thought he was the strongest guy in any room, the most handsome guy in any room, certainly the funniest guy in any room, and he really was. And we want to be able to portray that side of Pete for movie audiences around the world.
And it's worth noting Casey Affleck, Academy Award-winning actor.
Actor, yep.
Also, someone who starred in Finest Hours.
Right? Yeah, somebody who starred in The Finest Hours. I got to spend some time with Casey on the set of The Finest Hours, and was just kind of blown away by, how good he was and how natural he was. And, when we started to think about this project in 2017, the first name that came to my mind was, well, Casey can do this. Casey can be very physical. Mm-hmm. Casey can also act with a glance. And a look, as opposed to 8 pages of dialogue. If anybody goes to see Manchester by the Sea or rents it, you'll know what I'm talking about. Yeah. He can emote in a way that very few actors can, and he gravitated to the material very quickly. Dave and I took Casey Affleck up to meet Pete in Beverly at his house. So,
what was that like?
Well, Pete was a little sleepy that day because he was between medications. So I wish he was more with it, so to speak, and got a chance to spend time with Casey. But Casey spent a lot of time with Julie Frates, who's Pete's wife. And again, that if you read the book, you're going to find not only a story about heroism, but a real love story.
Yeah.
One of the most amazing love stories that I've ever heard. And, when I heard that Pete walked me through how he was diagnosed in 2012, and he was 27 years old at the time, and he had been self-diagnosing for several weeks, if not months, putting his tremors into WebMD. He was lethargic. He couldn't button his shirts or tie his shoes. And he kept getting those same 3 letters back, ALS, ALS. So he had cried his last tears by the time Mass General caught up to his own diagnosis. And he had to tell his parents with the doctors. They were, as you can imagine, devastated.
Yep.
Then he had to go to tell Julie, his girlfriend. Now, he had only been dating Julie for 8 months. Julie was a senior at Boston College at the time, economics major, strikingly beautiful, from a well-to-do family from Marblehead, had her entire future ahead of her. And he's driving from Mass General to Chestnut Hill, and he's having a conversation in his head. He says, I love her, and that's why I want her to leave me. But if she leaves me, I don't think I can do this on my own. So he wrestles with this, Kevin, until he gets to BC and sees her. And they're about to go to dinner where he's going to tell her what he has. And she thinks, well, is it lupus? Is it MS? And there's a debate in front of her dorm where she won't get in the car until Pete tells her what he has. So finally he says, okay, Julie, I'll tell you. I have ALS. I have Lou Gehrig's disease, and there is no cure.
Mm-hmm.
And her whole body shuts down for about 30 seconds. And she looks up at him and she says, Pete, I don't want to go to dinner with you tonight. I'd like you to take me home. And Pete says, okay, Julie, I get it. I'll take you home. And she walks up to him and she puts his face in her hands and she says, Pete, you don't get it. Take me home because I'm moving all of my things out of my parents' house and I'm moving in with you now.
Yeah,
you are my life now. This is no longer your fight. This is our fight.
Wow.
And they were soon married. They have a gorgeous, beautiful, incredibly delightful child Lucy. Named Lucy, yeah. Who will continue to, allow Pete to live on in her eyes and her smile and the great stories that her mother, the love of Pete's life, is going to be able to share with her for the rest of her life.
We just got a few more minutes left with you, and I'm glad that we've been able to spend this time dedicating it to talking about an individual like Pete Frates and his family, his wife Julie, and we kind of toyed with the idea of touching upon our original conversation. I would prefer not to, honestly.
I think that's probably appropriate.
It's a conversation for a later day.
Yeah,
maybe later on this month, because I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon.
Yep.
You've had a chance to kind of you're writing something for the morning.
Writing something for the morning, just really talking and describing, you know, how I got to meet Pete, his strength, and you know, Pete to his last breath thought that he would walk again. The last time Pete walked fully was when he walked his wife Julie down the aisle when they got married, and when he had his dance with her when they were husband and wife, and he pledged to himself that he would walk Lucy down the aisle when she is married at some point. And I think about that. I'm going to think about that tonight and, you know, for a long time to come. And I just want that little girl to know that she was loved by an amazing father who, although he couldn't communicate with her, he showed her his love through his eyes and everything else. And I remember when Julie would say that, well, Pete can't talk to her and she can't talk to him because she was a baby, but they communicate with each other just with simple mannerisms and with their eyes. And they had a beautiful father-daughter relationship that I don't think any of us, can really understand.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I mean, I have two daughters. I would ask you having two daughters, how it resonates with you.
Yeah, just hold your kids a little tighter, Kevin. Absolutely. as we always do after an event like this, and know that, you know, you're out there fighting the good fight every day, and certainly Pete did that. Pete did that for her. Pete did that for, you know, millions of families around the world who were going through something, you know, that he was experiencing, and knowing that it wouldn't be enough to save him, but it might be enough to save that next young 27-year-old man or woman who gets diagnosed and gets their life completely taken away from them by, you know, just a tap on the shoulder from God.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being my guest this evening. This was not an easy conversation to have, knowing that you were able to get to know.
Yeah.
All the ins and outs, I mean, within a relatively short amount of time, and I could see how it's taking a toll on you just to kind of talk about it, and knowing that this is, you know, this news and his passing is just, it's not the end, it's the beginning.
Hey, let's hope so. It's the beginning of, you know, a global fight in his name and his honor to rid the earth of this dreaded disease called ALS.
And if you're looking for something to do other than just put RIP Pete on social media, maybe it's a matter of maybe giving a donation, or at least, you know, finding out more about ALS and what you can do to help someone who might be going through such a debilitating disease that attacks one's nervous system.
Yeah.
And slowly just kind of, you know, takes the life from them.
It strangles you from the inside, Kevin, and I think Pete would want that from everybody. To donate to whatever organization that you can, or at least learn more about it so you can, you know, you can donate in the future.
Casey, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Thank you, Kevin.
And I want to thank you folks for joining us here on Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a good evening.